Shrimati Lasade, Vikajai, Samaveda Bhakta, Vrindikajai, Gaur Premananda. All glories, the assembled devotees. All glories, the assembled devotees. All glories, the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 4, text 21. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yad Angri Abhidhyana Samadhi Dautaya Dhyanu Pashyante He Tatvam Atmanah Vedanti Chaitat Kavayo Yata Ruchang Sa Me Mukundo Bhagavan Prasidatam Yaranga Vidyana Samadhi Dottaya Yānu paśyantihi tatvam atmanah tatvam atmanah vadanti caitat kavayo yata rucham asamme mukundo bhagavan prasidatam Yadangya Vidyana Samadhi Dottaya Dhyanu Pashyanti Tatam Atmanah Vedanti Chaitat Kavayo Yata Rucham Same Mukundo Bhagavan Prasidatam Yadangya Vidyana Samadhi Dottaya Dhyanu Pashyantihi Tatvam Atmanah Vedanti Chaitat Kavayo Yata Rucham Samay Mukundo Bhagavan Prasidatam. Okay. Anyone else?
Yadangri api abhijana samadhi dottaya.
Yadangri abhijana samadhi dottaya.
Yadu pashyanti tattvam atmanah.
Yadu pashyanti tattvam atmanah.
Jaya.
Kundo Bhagavan Prasidatam.
Adidataya. Kundo Bhagavan Prasidatam. Okay, what's that? Yad Angriyati Janas Samadhi Dautayam Okay. Yet angry.
Whose lotus feet?
Obhidhyana. Thinking of it every second. Samadhi. Trance. Dautaya.
Being washed off.
Diya. By such clean intelligence. Anupashyanti, does see by following authorities.
He certainly.
Tatvam, the absolute truth. Atmanah, of the Supreme Lord and of oneself. Vedanti,
they say.
Cha also. Etat,
this.
Kavayaha, philosophers or learned scholars. Yataruchyam,
as he thinks.
Saha,
he.
May,
mine.
Mukundaha,
Lord Krishna.
Who gives liberation?
Bhagavan,
the personality of Godhead.
Prasidatam,
be pleased with me.
So,
translation: it is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who gives liberation by thinking of his lotus feet at every second. Following in the footsteps of authorities, the devotee in trance can see the absolute truth. The learned mental speculators, however, think of him according to their whims. May the Lord be pleased with me. So purport by Sivan Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The mystic yogis, after a strenuous effort to control the senses, may be situated in a trance of yoga just to have a vision of the Supersoul within everyone. But the pure devotee, simply by remembering the Lord's lotus feet at every second, at once becomes established in real trance, because by such realization his mind and intelligence are completely cleansed of the diseases of material enjoyment. The pure devotee thinks himself fallen into the ocean of birth and death, and incessantly prays to the Lord to lift him up. He only aspires to become a speck of transcendental dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. The pure devotee, by the grace of the Lord, absolutely loses all attraction for material enjoyment, and to keep free from contamination, he always thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord. King Kulashekara, a great devotee of the Lord, prayed, Krishna Twidya Pada Pankaja Panjarantam Dhaiva Me Vishatu Manasaraja Hung Saha Prana Prayana Samaye Kapabhata Pitai Kanta Varodhana Vidos Maranam Kutaste. My dear Lord Krishna, I pray that the swan of my mind may immediately sink down to the stems of the lotus feet of your lordship, and be locked in their network. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked up with cough, how will it be possible to think of you? There is an intimate relationship between the swan and the lotus stem, so the comparison is very appropriate. Without becoming a swan or a paramahansa, one cannot enter into the network of the lotus feet of the Lord. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, the mental speculators, even by dint of learned scholarship, cannot even dream of the absolute truth by speculating over it for eternity. The Lord reserves the right of not being exposed to such mental speculators, and because they cannot enter into the networked stem of the lotus feet of the Lord, all mental speculators differ in conclusions, and at the end they make a useless compromise by saying, as many conclusions, as many ways, according to one's own inclination, yata rucham. But the Lord is not like a shopkeeper trying to please all sorts of customers in the mental speculator exchange. The Lord is what he is, the absolute personality of Godhead, and he demands absolute surrender unto him only. The pure devotee, however, by following the ways of previous acharyas or authorities, can see the Supreme Lord through the transparent medium of a bona fide spiritual master, anupashyanti. The pure devotee never tries to see the Lord by mental speculation, but by following in the footsteps of the acharyas, maha janayena, gata sa pantaha. Therefore, there is no difference of conclusions amongst the Vaishnava acharyas regarding the Lord and the devotees. Lord Chaitanya asserts that the living entity, jiva, is eternally the servitor of the Lord, and that he is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. This tattva of Lord Chaitanya's is shared by all four sampradayas of the Vaishnava school. They all accept eternal servitude to the Lord even after salvation. And there is no authorized Vaishnavacharya who may think of the Lord and himself as one. This humbleness of the pure devotee, who is 100% engaged in his service, puts the devotee of the Lord in a trance by which to realize everything, because to the sincere devotee of the Lord reveals himself as stated in the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, text 10. The Lord being the Lord of intelligence in everyone, even in the non-devotee, favors his devotee with proper intelligence, so that automatically the pure devotee is enlightened with the factual truth about the Lord and his different energies. The Lord is revealed not by one's speculative power or by one's verbal jugglery over the absolute truth. Rather, he reveals himself to a devotee when he is fully satisfied by the devotee's service attitude. Shukadeva Goswami is not a mental speculator or compromiser of the theory of as many ways, as many conclusions. Rather, he prays to the Lord only, invoking his transcendental pleasure. That is the way of knowing the Lord. Important verse and purport. Yadangya vidyana samaridottaya dhyanupashyanti hi tattvam atmanah vadanti chaitat kavayo yataruchaṁ same mukundo bhagavan prasidatam. So om gana timidandasha gananjana shlakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So this reminds me what Prabhupada is talking about, how the impersonalists say, you know, whatever you believe in, it's all right. Or people say, whatever you believe, the mental speculators say, whatever you believe in is all right. It reminds me of a time when Prabhupada came to Los Angeles, and he was commenting on a book that was just had just come out in 1974 or 75. And the book was called Transactional Analysis or something like that. And the philosophy of the book was, I'm okay, you're okay. And tatapat matapat. Now, like in India, they say the same thing. I think it was either Vivekananda or Ramakrishna said, I'm okay, you're okay, which is the same thing in Sanskrit. And so Prabhupada said that we say, I'm okay, you're not okay. That's quite a radical statement. I'm okay, you're not okay. So, in other words, why do we know, or how do we know that we're okay and that everybody else is not okay? That's a pretty proud statement to make. You know, we're okay, we're doing the right thing, and everybody else is in Maya, basically, except for us. You know, we're the devotees, and we couldn't be prouder, and if you don't like it, we're going to chant a little louder, as they say. Well, there's a danger in that, too, and I'm going to explain that in a second. But we know that our philosophy is perfect because we are experts by Srila Prabhupada's mercy in something called epistemology. Epistemology is a fancy word, which basically means the study of knowledge. Like, ology means study. Epista means knowledge. Just like you have teleology and ontology and biology and theology. So theology is the study of God. Ontology, the study of, you know, the essence of things. Anyway, all these different... teleology means the study of purposes. So epistemology means, basically, how do you know what you know? Which is an important question. And on that basis, we can approach anyone and say, how do you know what you know? Like someone may say, I believe that after death we go to hell unless we believe in the Lord Jesus. That's all right. And I ask them, how do you know that? And they say, well, that's what my priest taught me. But did Lord Jesus ever say that? Well, I don't know. You know, so it's kind of a problem for them when you approach them on that basis. Actually, the point is that the person who admits that they don't know is more intelligent than the person who says that they do know, other than Krishna conscious knowledge. Why? Because if they think they know, it's going to take a lot longer to teach them something real or true, because they have to unlearn what they think they know. Just like Prabhupada gave the example of someone who taught themselves how to play the piano. And usually if someone teaches themselves how to play the piano, they don't play the piano properly. Because in order to play the piano properly, you have a disciplic succession. Like in any sort of knowledge, whether it's material knowledge or spiritual knowledge, you have to approach an authority, even whether it's science or religion or playing a musical instrument or dancing, if you happen to be a Bharatanatyam dancer. Then, of course, modern dance is another thing. There's no authority for that. It's just like, you know, slam dancing. You've heard about that before? They have that still, slam dancing here?
No. So many new
dancing. They just like wiggle their bodies.
Yes.
I remember when I joined, before I joined the movement, obviously, before I joined the movement, my mother sent me to dance school to learn how to dance. Of course, not the Swami's step. She was teaching me how to dance, the cha-cha or something like that. So that's a parampara. There's a whole method of dancing the cha-cha or dancing whatever, the twist, which was popular in the 1960s. So in other words, you have to accept knowledge in a parampara, and you have to be able to examine to see whether that parampara is a valid, proper parampara. And if you try to teach yourself, then you have to be untaught before you can actually learn the parampara knowledge. And Prabhupada actually said that we should approach people. And first they have to admit that they don't know anything before they're able to accept Krishna consciousness. And of course we don't tell people that. That would be rather offensive. We go out in the street and we say, you don't know anything. But we have to bring them to the point of understanding, like asking them, how do you know what you know? You know, why do you believe this? Well, my mother taught me that. Well, my priest taught me that. Well, we believe what we believe because it's coming down in disciplic succession. This is called the descending process. And in the material world, you have different processes. Primarily, they're the ascending process, you know, speculation and You'll find Western philosophy and theology is full of this speculation. Christianity, not the original Christianity, but the Christianity as it's taught today, is full of this speculation from different theologians, whether you're talking about St. Thomas Aquinas or other theologians. They're just speculating upon what Jesus taught. And even the most famous teacher of Christianity, or the famous preacher, one of the most prominent preachers after Jesus Christ, was Paul. Originally his name was Saul. He actually speculated on what Jesus taught and adjusted everything to make Christianity very popular. And he changed things so much so that he was in opposition with the original apostles, you know, those who actually learned directly from Jesus Christ, you know, those who were the original disciples. He never even met Jesus Christ. He just, like, came up with his own philosophy, which is primarily the philosophy being followed by most of the Christian churches nowadays, is you simply have to believe in Jesus Christ. It's not by works alone, or not by works at all. You can do any damn thing you want. And if you simply believe, you'll go back to Godhead, or at least to heaven. This is kind of foolish. It's like saying to a person, a criminal, that you simply have to believe in the government and you don't have to follow the law. Isn't it? And many criminals believe in the government. That's why they try to avoid the government, especially if they're effective criminals. You know, you can't be a good criminal without believing in the government, right? Because you have to avoid the government. You have to avoid the police. And if you don't believe in the police will catch you more quickly. So it's not simply by belief that you become an honest person. It's by following the governmental rules that you're an honest person. In the same way, you know, Paul, getting back to the point, Paul changed everything. And so people think that they can do any damn thing in the name of Christianity as long as they're baptized or whatever. And we even find that nowadays in some devotees who think that, you know, I simply have to love Krishna. I don't have to follow the rules and regulations. I've seen that in many of the second generation devotees. Some people in the first generation say, well, they love Krishna so much. Well, if they love Krishna so much, they would do what Krishna said, Krishna wants, right? I mean, it's just like if you have a husband and the wife, and the husband is telling the wife, I love you so much, and she says, you know, can you give me a new sari? And he says, no, I love you too much. It's like that story, this is an interesting story of, let's see, I'm trying to remember the name of this person. Tulsidas. Okay, this is an interesting story from India. There's Tulsidas, who is the author of the Ramacharitamanasas, which is the most accepted version of the Ramayana in India today. So he has a very interesting history that he got married and he loved his wife very much. You probably know the story. He loved his wife very much, and his wife's father gave him this cloth shop to run. You know, he was a cloth dealer. And he was selling cloth. But he loved his wife so much that each and every time someone came to buy a nice piece of cloth, he thought, if this is such a nice piece of cloth, I shouldn't sell it. I should give it to my wife. So in other words, he wasn't a good businessman. So he was just like taking the cloth, giving it all to his wife, and not giving any money to his wife. So just speculating on how he could serve his wife. And of course, his wife was quite upset because she had like a pile of really nice saris at home, but no money for food or no money for anything else. And he kept telling his wife, I love you, I love you, I love you. And his wife said, this is a famous story, actually. His wife said, you know, if you actually love me, you would listen to me. And if you love Krishna, this is similar to the story of Bilvamangal Thakur, actually. If you love Krishna so much, you'd be a pure devotee. And he actually took his wife's words like very cutting. And that's why he writes in the in his books that, you know, he doesn't like women very much. Because he was hurt by that whole exchange. He even has this saying, you know, about anyway, I don't want to say beating your wife, you know, beating your wife and your madanga and everything like that. Kimcha bagi. Anyways, there's a whole quote from Tulsidas. So the point is that if he actually loved his wife, he would do what his wife said, not just simply speculating on doing what he thought was good for his wife. So getting back to the point of epistemology, so how do we know what we know in Krishna consciousness? Because we have this descending process. Ivam parampara praptam imam raja shayo vidahu. It comes from Krishna, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The dharma can only come, or knowledge, let's use dharma in a larger sense. You know, dharma, of course, means duty, but it also means the inherent quality or the essential quality of something. Like Prabhupada said, the dharma of fire is heat and light. So dharma can only come from eternal dharma, you know, something that's essential, inseparable, can only come from God or Krishna. And so Krishna taught various personalities. You know, Krishna taught Lord Brahma, as we're reading about here. Krishna taught Lakshmi. That's another sampradaya. Krishna taught the four Kumaras, and Krishna taught Lord Shiva. You have these four basic sampradayas. And the pure knowledge is coming down through these different sampradayas. So therefore, we are sure that we're presenting the absolute truth. That's the first point here that Prabhupada makes in his purport. Second point is, as far as seeing Krishna or thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day, it says here, by thinking of his lotus feet at every second, following the footsteps of authorities, the devotee in trance can see the absolute truth. That's a very difficult prescription for us, to see or think of Krishna 24 hours a day. In fact, it's mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that in our particular stage of devotional service, that whenever we try to think about Krishna, the mind automatically goes somewhere else. It's interesting. For a pure devotee, whenever a pure devotee tries to think of Maya, his mind automatically goes to Krishna. Like that story of Mukunda. Advising the Nawab Hussein Shah, that means the Muslim governor. And as he was advising him, then in some medical procedures, then someone was fanning the Muslim governor with a peacock fan. And when he saw the peacock fan, what did he think of? He thought of Krishna. And when he thought of Krishna, he fainted in ecstasy. That's called a vibhava. Vibhava means something that reminds you of Krishna. Either Krishna directly reminds you of Krishna or things related with Krishna, like a peacock feather. And so how many of us have that experience when we see a peacock feather, we fall into trance? Not many of us. I mean, maybe we think of Krishna because it does remind us of Krishna, but then in 10 seconds later, the mind goes somewhere else. Or especially when we're chanting japa, we're trying to concentrate on the holy names, but barely we can get one mantra out before the mind is somewhere else. So the mind, of course, according to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Chanchala Himanaha Krishna Pramati Balabhadrudam, Tajaham Nigraham Manye Vayor Iva Shadushkuram. Arjuna says the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, and to control it is more difficult than controlling the wind. So we've all experienced that. So, what do we do about it? I mean, we have this like wind going on in our mind, especially if we're vata by constitution. If we're kapha, we're just sleeping and not thinking of Krishna. You know, all the different types of Ayurveda constitution, you have vata, kapha, and pitta. If we're kapha, we don't think of anything, we're just in dull ignorance. And if we're vata, then the mind's just like whoo, whoo, going all over the place, you know. Every half a second is flying from one end of the universe to the other. And if we're pitta, we're just thinking of acquiring things for ourselves. So we got a problem. We got a problem in thinking of Krishna because we're not very advanced in Krishna consciousness. But the problem is easily solved according to our nature. It's solved by a very interesting verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir, Brahmagno, Brahmano Hutam, Brahma Dena Kantavyam, Brahma Karma Samadhinam, which is a wonderful verse. And it's that verse is often chanted by other spiritual groups, particularly the Brahma Kumaris. They like to chant that verse. And they don't really understand what it means. That really, the literal meaning of that verse is that if you do something for Krishna, because Krishna is the supreme Brahman, it's hard to do something for the impersonal Brahman, isn't it? I mean, what does the impersonal Brahman want? I don't know. More light? It has enough light. You know, what can you do? What can you do for the impersonal Brahman? What can you do for the super soul? I don't know. But Krishna, it's easy to figure out what Krishna wants, because patram pushpam palam tayam yume bhakta priyachati. I mean, Krishna gives us the things he likes, and also Lord Chaitanya gives us the things he likes, and the spiritual master gives us the things that Krishna likes. You know, like preaching Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting, satatam kirtiyanto mam yatantan cha dradavrata. So that's pretty easy. So if we do something for the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is doing what he wants, not just what we want. Because oftentimes we can say, I'm doing this for God. We can justify anything like that. Like I was, one day I was in Serbia, and we went by this place where they were hang gliding. You know what hang gliding is? And I was thinking, well, maybe I should do that for Krishna. The devotee with me said, yeah, Maharaj, I'll pay for it. You know, disciples, they're blind. They'll do anything the guru wants. That's, of course, Prabhupada said, blind following and absurd inquiries would be to be condemned. He says that in the Gita, too. So anyway, I said to the disciple, hey, you want to go hang gliding? And he said, yeah, sounds great, Guru Dave. You can take pictures of you hang gliding. I said, well, on Facebook, it wouldn't look so good. So I was trying to think, you know, how can we do it for Krishna? You know, trying to justify my maya for Krishna. Because in my whole life, I wanted to go hang gliding. So I was thinking, maybe if I go hang gliding and have a little banner in the back, you know, saying, chant Hare Krishna, floating through the sky, you know, preaching Krishna consciousness. Yeah. And then I was thinking, but if something happens and I break a leg or something, how do I explain that to the devotees? Ecstatic kirtan, jumping up and down. So I thought, no, I guess Krishna doesn't want it. Took me about 10 minutes to figure out Krishna didn't want it. So we have all these different ways. We think, you know, I want to do this for Krishna, I want to do that for Krishna. But basically, we do need the guidance of, let's say, advanced devotees, you know, spiritual masters. If the spiritual master is not present, then, you know, advanced devotees, association with devotees, so we can check with the devotees whether something is pleasing to Krishna. That's why Prabhupada said, you know, if the devotees are all together, then they're like many sticks that can't be broken. But when a stick is by itself, in other words, a devotee is just by himself, a devotee can easily get into maya and be broken by maya and get into all sorts of nonsense things. So therefore, we need to do something that is pleasing to Krishna, and that's affirmed by other devotees. And when that's confirmed by other devotees, then if we get absorbed in that service, in fact, it says that one of the primary duties of the spiritual master is not simply to collect guru dakshin, but is to guide the devotee in engagement according to the devotee's psychophysical nature. In other words, the guru is supposed to, or guru or advanced devotee or Krishna conscious authority or siksha guru, whatever you may call him or her, is supposed to understand what your psychophysical nature is and engage you according to that nature. And that's what Krishna was doing in the Gita. Arjuna had a different idea. He wanted to engage according to another person's nature. He wanted to be a Brahmin because he just wanted that to run away from the battle of Kurukshetra, which, according to Krishna, is renunciation in the mode of passion. But Krishna said to him, by your nature, you're going to be forced to fight anyway. It's a fact. I mean, that was shown in the Mahabharata. When Arjuna one time was meditating to get weapons, actually, But he was meditating, you know, he was sitting down meditating. And then as he was sitting down and meditating, a boar, that means a pig with tusks on it, started to attack him. And when the boar was attacking, you know, was running towards him, he took out his bow and arrow and he shot the boar. At the same time, there was a karata, that's a hunter or lower class person, who also shot the boar. And Arjuna got in an argument with him. He said, I shot the boar first. And normally, if one was a Brahmin, they would be saying, thank you very much for shooting the boar. Isn't it? I mean, if someone protected me by shooting a boar, and, you know, even if I had my own gun or something like that, I would be, oh, thank you very much for helping me, Prabhu. All glories to Prabhupada. So, but Arjuna, because Kshatriya is influenced by the mode of passion, his pride was damaged because someone else had shot the boar. And so he had this big argument with the Karata, big fight with the Karata. Little did he understand that the Karata was actually Lord Shiva, the story in the Mahabharata. And basically, all the arrows in his quiver ran out. He couldn't find any more arrows. So finally, he had to fight with his bow. Finally, he was wrestling the Karata, and there were sparks flying from his body. Finally, he was knocked unconscious. And he started to worship Lord Shiva. When he came back to consciousness, made a little Shiva Linga in the ground, and then he put a garland on the Shiva Linga and discovered the Karata had the same garland on it. So he discovered it was Shiva. So then he became pacified. So the purpose of telling that story is to illustrate the fact that you can't really take someone's psychophysical nature out of them, even if they're a pure devotee. They do have it, because you have a certain type of body. Just like if you have a certain type of car, let's say you have, what's a fast race car?
Ferrari.
No, there's better ones than that. What's
Lamborghini?
Lamborghini, yeah, I like that better than a Ferrari. You know, so it can go, how fast can it go? 300 kilometers.
This one is now 450.
450, okay.
Oh, wow. Is that this one?
450. All right, so it goes really fast. And then if you have a Yugo, I don't know if they make Yugos anymore. That's the old Yugoslavian car that was basically you put your feet through the floorboard and that's how you... It's like the Jetsons type of thing. You know, that's how it is. I mean, you spend half your time pushing the car. That's it. So you can't put them in a race together. You know, the driver may be the same. You know, you may have the same person drive a Yugo or the same person drive a Lamborghini, but it has a different effect. So the soul is always the same, but you're given a particular type of body, psychophysical nature, that's attracted to certain types of work. And it's not that one is worse or better than another. So we have to figure out what our particular... or the other devotees, or spiritual authority, whatever. Somehow or other, has to be figured out what is our psychophysical nature. Because if we try to act differently than that, we won't be able to fix our minds. And ultimately, we'll probably deviate from Krishna consciousness because, you know, we're not on that platform. Of course, if you're a pure devotee, you can do anything. You can do anything. But still, you prefer to act according to particular body, you know, psychophysical nature. So how do you ascertain what is your psychophysical nature? It's very easy. It doesn't take a lot of thought. You just figure out what you can do for 12 hours a day without getting bored. Isn't it? I mean, we can do a lot of things. I mean, I with my nature, I know how to fix a car. I know how to build buildings. Which is like shuja work. I know how to do administration. I know how to play guitar too. You remember that. But if I try to engage in like repairing cars for 12 hours a day, I'll probably commit suicide. You know, just in my mind, I'll just go wild. You know, I don't know what I'll do. You know, I've done it for Krishna before. Or if I play guitar for 12 hours, I don't think I could do that either. It's very boring for me. But you know, if I study philosophy or even read, like, even mundane things, like even if I read history, something's very interesting. Just like this morning, I was hearing about the Renaissance. You know, the Renaissance. That means rebirth. Actually, that's the technical meaning of the word Renaissance. Naissance means like birth. Renaissance, renaissance. You know, Renaissance, birth. Hearing about the Renaissance, I was hearing about different philosophers. Anyway, so, I mean, it's somehow or other, and I was engaging that in Krishna consciousness, somehow or other, I figured how to engage it. So, but, it, you know, for me, it's very interesting. I can just, like, study these things and hear these things and engage in studying the scriptures for many hours a day, and it doesn't get boring. Other things get boring, you know. You know, basically, and then, you know, administrate. You know, I have a GBC service, and because it's really not completely my nature, you know, after a while the GBC meetings get like, get me out of here. You know, we pick up our iPod or something like that and play with it in the middle of the meetings, but we have to hide it because it's against the rules. Like in the GBC meeting, we have this code. And if someone catches you playing with your iPod or with your whatever during the meeting, they say, I'm calling the code on you. They said, okay, I'm sorry. So you learn to hide it underneath your dhoti, you know, the cavers. So nobody can see what you're doing. So, I mean, I'm just revealing my mind. This is like confession, true confessions of a GBC person. So... So therefore, I suggested the GBC that we have a different division of Brahmins and Kshatriyas, you know, in the GBC. You know, people who are more visionaries and people who just really like to get into the accounting and stuff like that. And that went over like a lead balloon. Because the people who were into the accounting, they said, you know, how can you think we're lesser? But then it's not lesser, it's just everybody's different. Everybody's equal. You know, Shudra can go back to Godhead, you know, fixing cards for Krishna. There's no problem with that. A Shudra may be more advanced than a Brahmin. And so we don't distinguish like that, but people think in terms of higher and lower. And also, you know, you have that caste system in India that really inculcates that particular consciousness that, you know, the Brahmanas are so great that even if someone else steps on their shadow, you kill them, you curse them, right? You see all these things, like no one's supposed to step on a Brahmin's shadow, or like a Shudra steps on, he curses him or creates a demon out of his hair, you know, to attack them or something like that. So anyway, it's all equal. So basically, figure it out and do it for Krishna under the jurisdiction of, you know, the advanced devotees or the management of the Krishna conscious movement or whatever, and just be absorbed 24 hours a day. And according to that verse in the Gita that I quoted, Brahma Karma Samadhinam. That means that, if you're absorbed, that is samadhi. And then by doing that, like Prabhupada said, you know, work now, samadhi later. But it's the same principle. By doing that, then Krishna himself, the personal form of Krishna and Radha and Krishna, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they will manifest themselves in your heart by doing that. And I have practical experience. When I was a new devotee, we did Sankirtan, you know, book distribution so many hours a day. And then when we were finished, we did like 12 hours a day. It was really ecstatic. And then when we were finished, we would listen to Prabhupada's tapes at night. And it was just like, it was clear. It was like someone focused the lens on the camera. You know, when you're not engaged in service according to your nature or absorbed in service, it's like, you know, Krishna Katha is like a little hazy, you know, it's just like, you can't really focus on it. But when you actually engage according to your nature, then when you hear the Krishna Katha, it's very sharp and clear, crisp. And then you can remember Krishna. And I remember those days, and we would dream of Krishna at night. Nowadays, you know, I don't know if I dream of Krishna at night. I probably dream of, have nightmares. Well, thanks to disciples, they give me nightmares. Prabhupada said the spiritual master has to suffer the sins or karma of the disciples by having bad dreams at night. So it's like, you know, a horror movie every night. Instead of going to see Dracula and King Kong, you know, we don't need to see those movies anymore. So But when we're absorbed, seriously speaking, I mean, that's a little joke, but seriously speaking, when we're absorbed in service, Brahmarpanam Brahma Havig Brahmagno Brahmana Uttam Brahma Kena Tena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadhi, then that's samadhi. That's all, really all we want. And then we become fit recipients of pure devotional service, because we're going to have to tolerate a lot of things. Tat Tena Kampam Susha Mikshamanam Bhum Janabhat Mikritam Vipakam Ridvad Bapurve Vritadam Namaste Jiveta Yo Bhukti Pade Sadayabhak. So it says that one should engage his mind, his body, and his words in Krishna's service and tolerate everything and be absorbed in that, and then you get pure devotional service as a result. So that's our methodology here. We're not, you know, pure devotees are on a very exalted platform of devotional service, but we can engage according to the footsteps, as Prabhupada says, that following in the footsteps of authorities, Mahajana Yena Gatasa Panta, in devotional service full time, 24 hours a day. So, any questions or comments about any of the points I made? That's how you remember Krishna, yeah.
Well, you said that Shudra working because they can't fix in the car is better than a Brahmana who's been reciting shlokas or studying scripture. How it is?
Not necessarily he's better. If a Shudra is doing it for Krishna, it's better than a Brahmana who's doing it just for profit, adoration, distinction. In other words, it's a question of being absorbed in Krishna's service. It's as good as, if a Brahmin's absorbed in quoting shlokas for Krishna's service, then he's equal to a Shudra who's absorbed in fixing cars for Krishna, in fixing the Sankirtan vehicle. It has an equal, Krishna sees them both with equal vision, because he sees the devotion. The real point is to be serving Krishna, being absorbed in it, and be devoted, thinking, I'm doing it for Krishna's pleasure. According to Rupa Goswami, that's pure devotional service. Anyabhi lashita shunyam jnana karma anavantam anukul yena krishna anushilanam bhakti uttamam. To actually doing what Krishna wants, being absorbed in it, and thinking, doing it gladly, happily, and trying to please Krishna by doing it. Because if you do it ritualistic, let's say a Brahmin does something ritualistic, that's called niyamagraha. It doesn't really connect him with Krishna. I mean, it's better than nothing. He's doing it for Krishna, yes, but he's not doing it with the consciousness of trying to please Krishna. So he's doing karma yoga instead of bhakti yoga. Karma yoga means, literally karma yoga means to do something for Krishna. And bhakti yoga means to do something for Krishna with devotion. So you add that in, the added ingredient. In other words, bhakti yoga automatically includes karma yoga. But karma yoga doesn't automatically include bhakti yoga. You know, so you can say, if you want to use a syllogism, if bhakti yoga, then karma yoga is automatically there. But you can't say, you can't reverse the syllogism saying if karma yoga, bhakti yoga is automatically there, because sometimes karma yoga can be just by itself without bhakti. You know, they're just doing something for Krishna. Why are you doing it for Krishna? Because I have to. It's my duty. And if I don't do it, I get karma. You know, that's not bhakti yoga. That's karma yoga right there. But bhakti yoga means I'm doing it to please Krishna. I want to please Krishna. There's like someone who's cooking. If they're just cooking for, you know, just cooking for the sake of, that's their duty, or they're getting a salary for it or something like that, that's one thing. But if they're cooking to please the person whom they're cooking for, that's different. Just like sometimes devotees cook for me, and if they're just cooking because they have to, it's not so pleasing to me. But if they're cooking because they really want to, then it's a devotional exchange. You understand the difference? If we're doing things out of duty, it's not exactly bhakti at that point. It may be preliminary to bhakti, you know, vaidhi, which is just like rules and regulations. But real bhakti begins at the point where you're doing something to please the object of your service.
Those who do because they have to, or those who want to.
Yeah, instead of saying, you know, I have to do it, why are you chanting your rounds? Because I have to chant my rounds. No, I'm chanting my rounds because I'm choosing to chant my rounds because I want to become Krishna conscious. I want to please Krishna. I want to please my spiritual master. Whatever. That's the difference between bhakti and just ritualism. So, no, a Brahmin can be more advanced than a Shudra or less advanced. It depends upon his devotion. That's really the point. It's not that a Brahmin is necessarily better than a Shudra. He's not necessarily worse. It just depends on devotion. So if a Shudra is like fixing cars and thinking, yeah, I really want to please Prabhupada by getting the Sankirtan vehicle going nicely so the devotees can go out and distribute Prabhupada's books, that's pure devotional service right there. And if the Brahmin is saying, I'm doing all these rituals so I can collect money from my heaven, you know, like you see sometimes the Brahmanas, they have a price list for the different sacrifices. We'll do a Griha Pravesh, in other words, housewarming ceremony. Here's my price list. You know, I'll come to your home and bless your home for 200 euros. And I'll give your child a name for 300 euros. And I'll go to your funeral for 500 euros. And if you don't pay the money, you can't die. This is actually what caused the whole revolution in India. You had these ritualistic brahmanas who had a monopoly on being brahmanas. You know, a monopoly means they can charge whatever damn price they want. Because, you know, you restrict the supply. When you study economics, you restrict the supply, the price goes up because the demand either remains constant or whatever goes up. So that's what Prabhupada, I was just reading the other day, that's how Prabhupada said the Indian government restricted the supply of rice one time and created a famine in West Bengal. And so they could make more money. So the Brahmanas did do that too. You know, they restricted the supply of Brahmanas. Even we have some people in ISKCON who are like ritualistic Brahmanas who say that only Brahmanas can be gurus. You know, there's people from India like that. You have to be born in a Brahmin family. And there's actually one person who came to the United States recently. He's not a member of ISKCON, but he's one of the Goswami families from Vrindavan. Anyway, I'm not going to mention his name. And he's just saying, you know, these ISKCON devotees can't really be Brahmins or gurus because they have to be born in a Brahminical family. Then if we state, well, what about Narottama Das Thakur, who was born in like a Shudra family? He says, well, that's an exception. So what happens is the Brahmanas, traditionally in India, not all of them, there's many wonderful Brahmanas. The Brahmanas, they actually were interested in making money. And of course, that means they lose their status anyway. If you sell your Brahminical activities, you're not a Brahmana anymore. If you say, you know, I'll do a funeral for 500 euros, that means you're basically a Shudra or Vaishya, Shudra, whatever. I mean, even a Vaishya is not taking a salary. Shudras take salaries. And then a Vaishya makes money by trade and commerce and cow protection. But it's not that a Vaishya will actually go and say, you know, please pay me a salary for doing this activity. So a Brahmin actually loses his caste immediately if he has a set price. If he takes a donation, that's fine. You know, Brahmana. Even doctors used to be Brahmanas. The doctor would go and cure you, you know, Ayurvedic doctor, and he would say, you know, give whatever you can, that's all right. That's okay. But nowadays, the doctors are the richest people in society. I mean, they're doing unnecessary operations just so they can make money. I don't know about this country, but in America, you know, if someone wants an open heart surgery, the doctor makes $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And so the doctor's looking at you as a money bag. Instead of like, how can I cure this person? He's thinking, how can I operate on this person? And they're so enthusiastic to operate that you really have to take a marker and mark the part of your body that you want to have operated on, or else they'll cut off the wrong leg or do... Seriously. You have to take one of these, you know, magic markers and say, this is the leg that has the growth on it. Or this is the kidney. You know, seriously, this is not a joke. It's actually, they do that. Because these doctors are supposed to be Brahmins working for the welfare of society. I've just become Shudras of the lowest caste, you know, and actually Rakshasas, basically. Sorry about that. Don't put this tape out. And don't release this one, especially to any doctor. No, there's good doctors, too. I'm not saying. They're all like that. Because, so what is a Brahmin? Brahmin makes his money, yajan, patan, dana, pratigra. Giving, charity, teaching, but there's no salary. So in Kali Yuga, the Brahmanas are just like most of them, or many of them, are interested in money. So to be a real Brahmin means to be absorbed in Brahman. That's the literal definition of Brahman is he who knows Brahman, not someone who knows how to do all the rituals. And so if a Brahmin knows Brahman, then he can be a pure devotee. And if a Shudra works for Krishna, then he can be a pure devotee too. I mean, look at Ramananda Roy was considered a Shudra. And he's Vishaka, right? Lord Chaitanya, and he had the most intimate discussions. It's called Ramananda Samvada. And he's Vishaka, and he was considered a Shudra. Norsal Narottamadas Thakur and others. And, of course, there's many pure devotee Brahmins, too. So, the whole point is devotion, not your caste. And the whole point is engaging. And like Arjuna was a pure devotee. I'd love to be Arjuna's servant. And he's a Kshatriya. He's not a Brahmin. And he ended up killing Brahmins. Dronacharya, right? Of course, Dronacharya, in one sense, had lost his caste. I mean, that's a different thing from acting improperly. And whereas you had this...
He was not killing Drona.
No, but he was part of the whole thing, sorry. But Drishtadyumna was the one who killed Drona. Drishtadyumna was the one who cut his head off. Yeah, you're right. But he had to fight with Drona. You're right. So, you have a question?
Yes, go down. It sounded very nice when you said that we find our
nature
by studying that what would be the perfect job for us that we would feel nice for, 12 hours a day. And it seems that many people are actually forced to do something else.
Hmm.
And it can be a big challenge to turn the mind into thinking that, okay, anyway, this is not my dream job, or this is not the thing I would actually like to do all the time, but right now I have to do it. But then there's a risk that one gets a little bit strange attitude in one's mind, like if I cannot do this service that I really feel like, okay, I would like to, garden all the time or paint or something, but instead I'm actually now completely sick, or I have suddenly, something else happens. And then I have to turn the mind into thinking that, okay, actually this is now my service.
Right.
To do something completely different.
So how do you deal with that?
So how can one avoid this, turning the mind into something strange, like getting, feeling like a martyr, or like thinking, okay, I couldn't do this service, which I was kind of created, and instead I had to do something else. Like you said that you would like to spend all time reading.
Reading and talking about Krishna and hang gliding.
Instead, you spend 10 hours a day in a meeting.
Yeah.
But somehow you are able to think that it's your service anyway, even if it doesn't feel like...
Yeah.
Your nature to do that.
Yeah. All right. So that's actually an interesting point. So in the Vedic system, there's normal duties and emergency duties too. That's one point. I'm not, and there's more than that I'm going to talk about. Emergency, we could be ready to do anything. You know, I can fix a car, I can do any of these things in emergency. But really what we find ourselves doing sometimes is emergency duties more than just during an emergency. And it can be problematic, as you say, because then we can just like develop a psychological state that can actually be harmful even to our physical health, you know, because we may be resentful. You know, resentfulness or other emotions come, or we're not happy.
Yeah, it's like one is supposed to live a peaceful life in Krishna consciousness, and instead it feels like emergency, like year after year.
Prabhupada actually said the same thing. He said, I came to Krishna consciousness for peace, and it didn't happen. Yeah. Now, Tamal Krishnamurti said, it was in the context of Tamal Krishnamurti said, you know, that my mind is so agitated, I can't even hear my japa and prabhupada said, me too, you know. So, how to transform that? I'll tell you in my own life what I do. You know, if I have to sit through a meeting or something like that that's really not my nature, at the same time I will have something else to divert my mind. I was thinking of different strategies. At one point, I was thinking of like getting a wireless thing I could put in my ear and listen to class or something philosophy at the same. You know, hide it. Like that, I was thinking of doing, you know, I had to grow my hair long so they could see of the air. But I mean, basically, one of the things I do is, you know, during if I have to sit through something that's really boring for me, then I'll be try to learn like Hindi at the same time, which I'm trying to study right now, so I could speak in Hindi, or I'll read some verses, try to memorize some verses, or something like that, or if I'm doing something with my hands, I'll play a. If it's not in a meeting, obviously, then I'll play an e-book so I can listen to it at the same time. So there's different means where we can use either technology or tricks or something like that. I mean, one thing that I find very helpful is if, you know, not for meetings, of course, but if you keep transcendental sound going the whole time, then it makes things easier, isn't it? I mean, that's why I keep with me all the time, you know, at least one or two MP3 players. This is the most important, practically the most important thing in life. So I can hear Prabhupada's books. I mean, like I mentioned the other day, there's audio books that are readings of Srila Prabhupada's books, and also the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is one of my favorite. I really love it. I listen to it over and over again. The story of Gopakumar. And also the first part of Narada Muni, looking for the best devotee of the Supreme Personality of God. I listened to it all over and had the Ramayan. And so that, you know, this helps when I have to do things that I don't really like to do. But I can't absorb myself in it. So I have this, you know, different things. Or I remember when I had to go, it was interesting, when I had to go to someone's class who was really boring, I would just do things with my hands, like make ghee wicks or make flower garlands for the deities. And the devotee was giving class would say, you know, why you engage in arts and crafts during class? Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the heart to tell them, otherwise otherwise I would lose my mind. Your class is so slow. I mean, probably a nice class, but my mind tends to go really fast. As you see, I speak really fast. And if someone gives class like really slow, it's either that or fall asleep, which is not so productive. So, I've developed certain tricks to help my mind be engaged even when I'm doing things that really are not according to my nature. So it's a question of thinking outside the box, so to speak. There are ways to do it. Especially MP3 players are a very good way. I highly recommend everybody get at least one of them. And get these audiobooks. I mean, you can get audiobooks here, right?
Yeah.
And I believe the BBT is working on more now, right? Very important. I mean, this is extremely important, these audiobooks. I can't emphasize them enough. Because you can remain in contact with spiritual energy 24 hours a day. If you're driving a taxi, let's say your job is driving a taxi or whatever, you can do that. Another way to do that is actually think devotionally. You know, sometimes we can't listen to an audio book. You know, let's say you're working in a business place like that and having to do things, you know, just to make money and support your family or something like that. Then just keep a picture of Krishna in front of you, picture of, you know, spiritual picture. Remember what you're doing and why you're doing it. And that helps you focus even when you're not doing things according to your psychophysical nature. Just keep reminding. That's why it's important to have pictures of Krishna around. Because I can just look and see. A picture of Prabhupada, for me, pictures of Prabhupada are very important. Like, it's very nice, the room I'm staying in here has nice pictures of Prabhupada. I just look and I say, well, I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for you, Prabhupada. Isn't it? You know, I'd be somewhere else. I'd be Bahamas, you know, surfing or something like that. But for you, I'm willing to do it. Only for you. And so you do that, it helps you focus. Does that answer the question? I mean, think about different ways. I mean, just, in other words, think outside the box. Think outside of normal thoughts, and then you can figure a way to remain focused. Yeah.
A quick one. Well, is it from Tulsidas that it said four things you can beat with a stick?
Yeah, because Prabhupada said because he eventually had a negative attitude towards his wife. We don't follow that.
No, of course not.
We beat the mridanga, yes. But don't beat dogs and don't beat your wife.
Mm. Was it a drum?
I forget. I remember three of them. A drum.
Ashudra.
Three. Actually, it just said that Shoshanke Adhikari, like they should be controlled, if I remember.
Yeah, he also says three. These things get better with beating.
Drum, dog, Ashudra.
Yeah.
Not dog. No, it's three things, not four things.
It's like a shudra.
Shudra and your wife.
Shudra, drum, and your wife.
And it should be controlled, like, by beating or something. It should be
but we don't advocate that.
No, of course not.
In drum, yes, you can beat your drum all you want.
Yes.
But not your wife, and
but
not shudras.
That's where the source,
Shri Prabhupada was not so much kind of favor of Ramcharitmanas, although it was most widely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said sometimes don't beat these girls because they are Krishna's devotees.
Yeah, and Prabhupada also said the Ramcharitamanasa has some philosophical issues. He even said Mayavadi tinge. Prabhupada used the word tinge of Mayavad philosophy in it. So, I mean, we don't disrespect it because Tulsidas did love Lord Ram. Mm. So we don't want to go around criticizing, but we don't use it.
No.
We refer to the Valmiki Ramayana, which is the original Ramayana by the sage Valmiki. Okay.
How does the drum get better when you beat it?
That's a good question.
I don't understand it.
Louder sound.
Louder, I guess louder or something like that. I'm not a drum player, so.
Yeah, okay, but then you can apply that to your wife as well. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm not Tulsidas. I can't explain why he's...
This quote is misunderstood.
Well, Prabhupada did quote him.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I know.
Like that.
But maybe the context is a little misunderstood. Because if you really beat the drum, you break it.
Yeah.
You know, if you play it expertly. Okay,
yeah, cool. I think that was beating me expertly. But you're not supposed to beat your wife expertly either.
You do not.
Don't beat your wife expertly either.
That could be advocated. I'm just thinking outside the box.
Oh my God, you're on Mayapur TV right now. So, I mean, sometimes there has to be like some argument or something like that, if that can be understood. I mean,
the difference
of opinion.
Beat, what does that mean? It doesn't mean it may not necessarily mean destroyed. When you beat the drum, it means you hit it a little bit.
Yeah.
And it makes a beautiful sound.
Well, that's what the word means. But
you can't apply to other...
But beating the wife doesn't make a beautiful sound. Maybe. Maybe.
But that's, he said that it's about controlling.
Yes.
Control. If you control it in such a way that, as like beating or playing the mridanga is an art.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so if you control the wife in a way that you're supposed to do, like in a fine way, then she gets better.
Yes.
Yeah, but...
No,
that's not... That's
all right.
You shouldn't do that with the mridanga either. You break it.
No, No, not that with the wife either. I guess you could take it in a figurative way to guide the wife in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, you take it figuratively. But Tulsidas, Prabhupada said he didn't like women because of his experience. That's what Prabhupada said, because of his experience with his wife.
He was very attached, extremely attached to his wife, and something happened that wife rejected or something.
Well, she spoke very harshly to him. And she said, get out of here, you're not making... The story is...
Just like below Amandal Thakur.
Yeah, she said, you're not making money, you're just giving me these saris, you rascal. That was the story of Tulsidas. And Prabhupada said he had animosity towards women. So Prabhupada said, we don't follow that.
Right. You mentioned Chandrika Pandit also had some bad experience.
Yeah, Chandrika Pandit also. And
some
but Bilba Mangal Thakur never developed animosity towards women.
On the contrary.
He actually became absorbed in Radha and Krishna afterwards. He actually developed animosity towards his own senses.
Yes.
He put out his eyes.
Yes.
Because he blamed his senses, not the woman. Which is actually the right attitude. How can you blame the sense? It's like looking at some food you're attracted to and getting angry with it. Isn't the reason I'm attracted to pizza is the pizza is nonsense. But I'm nonsense, not the pizza. Especially if it's offered to Krishna. So we don't want to blame the object of our attraction for our attraction. It's my fault that I'm attracted to the object of my attraction. All right. Yes, another question.
You mentioned this one of the point that this first satan compound is a mixture mono that by tolerating engaging in devotional service, you get the gift of pure devotional service.
Right.
But at the same time, I find it very difficult, especially there's also one statement, I think, coming from Srila Prabhupada, that one should not be angry at the instruments of one's karma.
That's right.
And sometimes the devotees, also like Ramas, which are very dear students of Krishna, but still cause us a lot of trouble, or we experience it in that way. Like, how to really develop this proper attitude that we don't develop in the most sensitive ways of devotees?
That's good, yeah. Because sometimes I joke, I say there's fourfold miseries for a devotee. Adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic, adidevotiic. the fourfold miseries. So, other devotees, miseries from other devotees. So, we have to see Krishna. Like the example given in the Bhagavatam is of Dharma the bull being beaten by the personality of Kali. And he is asked by Parikshit Maharaj, who has done this to you? And Dharma the bull said, it's very difficult to ascertain. And ultimately, the conclusion was, it's Krishna's arranged that. Ultimately, we have to see Krishna. He's put me in a specific circumstance. If a devotee is reacting with me in a certain way, then Krishna's put me in that circumstance. Of course, it's not that we have to stay and take being abused either. That's another thing. It's not that, I'll give my own example. Like when I was a new devotee, I was traveling with a sannyasi, and he was, I don't want to say he was abusing me because he'll hear this class. So he was very nice. But anyway, he was really tough. I was traveling with Bhakta Tirtha Maharaj, and me were traveling with him, and he would continually chastise us. He said he was chastising Bhakta Tirtha Maharaj because Bhakta Tirtha Maharaj was proud, having been the student body president in Princeton before. And, he and Bhakta Tirtha Maharaj and I were continually, embracing and crying together, being chastised by the sannyasi. And we were only 21 years old. And, of course, we always said, we're getting purified. This is a typical thing to say in ISKCON, that whatever happens to you, you're getting purified. If you get sick because you ate too many chili peppers, it's purification. And whatever happens, it's purification. If the temple president yells at you, oh, you're getting purified. So we would say we're getting purified, but ultimately it was a little bit too much. I was told many times that you're not qualified to be a brahmachari, you're not qualified to be a devotee. It's not that we should stick around and getting abused like that. It's just not our duty to be abused like that. We can tolerate, but there's certain things that will be detrimental even to our own spiritual lives, that if we sit around and tolerate them. So there takes some discrimination in that regard. It's not that we just... But we continue our service, regardless. Like I remember, oh yeah, I'll give it a practical example. This was not the same sannyasi. This was, there were two personalities, and I can mention their names, Guru Kripa and Yashodanandana, who were like criminals. I mean, they literally, I don't know if any of you, you probably met some of these people, but... I mean, he was like, he used to be a Marine, and, you know, just... So I was traveling with them. Somehow or other, I ended up traveling with them. And they were so... It was like criminals. I mean, I won't tell you... We're on the public internet, so I won't tell all the things they did. But they were just so abusive to the brahmacharis. And to me, I was taking care of their deities. I was the senior member of the party. And... Eventually, I just went up to them, and they were talking more about illicit sex than anything else, you know, in a negative way. And I went up to them and I said, hey, you guys, you're talking more about illicit sex and sex in general than Rahasa's talk. And you're talking more about Maya, you must be in Maya. You know, this was dangerous because these were thugs. They killed one of their brahmacharis. They drowned him in the Jamuna. At least if you have to drown someone, that's a good place to do it. I mean, if you got to kill someone, why not? It's mercy, isn't it?
Purify him,
yeah. So I was actually taking my life in my own hands because I didn't want to be abused like that. I said, you know, I'm leaving. You guys are in Maya. And I was a brahmachari, you know, just like 21-year-old brahmachari, telling these two thugs, basically, that they're in Maya, and I just... And they looked at each other, what should we do with this guy? What should we do? I said, I'm leaving. And I left. Because I didn't want to be in an abusive situation. Yeah, I even took their deities with me.
This was in India?
No, this was in America. This was in America. They had this traveling party. And they did a lot of service for Prabhupada. They collected to pay the temple in Vrindavan and things like that. I'm not criticizing them per se, but I'm just saying their behavior at that time was extremely repulsive. And I didn't accept it. But I went on serving Krishna. You know, I went to the nearest temple, took the deities, and I became vice president of the nearest temple, was serving, it was San Diego actually, serving it, and I continue to serve. So there's many circumstances where we're put in where we can't continue for one reason or other. We have to protect our spiritual lives. I mean, you can't put ourselves in a position of being abused all the time. I mean, even like a lady and a husband and lady are together and the man is beating the wife. I mean, she shouldn't just stay there and be beaten. You know, it's just the wrong thing, isn't it? I mean, we don't want to separate families. Obviously, we're not in favor of divorce. But, you know, if the wife is being beaten black and blue, I mean, I've had to call... the social service, the police on husbands who were beating their wives. You know, because I can't tolerate it. And sometimes the woman is just tolerating it, and it's called codependency.
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, Stockholm syndrome, where she actually thinks, you know, he's going to get better if I just give him love. But it doesn't work like that. It's called codependency. Yeah, the person who's being beaten, it starts to identify with the person who's beating. I mean, it's just, you know, at a certain point, it's not our duty to be abused.
Yeah. How about wives beating husbands?
How about wives beating husbands? That's okay. That's bona fide. So, no, I've had wives who would throw food processors at their husbands, you know, and so, you know, that's not okay either. You know, we don't want physical abuse or mental or emotional abuse is not proper. It's not the way to deal with people. We can correct people, help people, but it takes more time. I was explaining this to someone, a temple president, who just was trying to correct the devotees just by blasting them and giving them orders. And I said, really, if you want to correct them, you have to sit down peacefully in an office and talk to them and hear what their feelings and needs are. That's the way to deal with devotees. You can't just like do management on the fly, on the run. You say, do this. If you don't do this, you're a rascal. I'm the boss. If you have to tell people you're the boss, you've lost your authority. Because management should be done like in a cooperative way. So so we don't want any beatings or even emotional abuse. I think we have to end because it's time for prasadam, right? All glorious to Srila Prabhupada.